afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, radio for the rest of us. My name is Elaine Summerfield, your host for Inspire Indeed, where we're learning about community issues in Richmond and the nonprofits and innovative changemakers that are working to address them. Hopefully you'll learn something new about the community and how you can get involved and make a difference with your deeds. Well, today we're going to be talking a little bit about Virginia's General Assembly, which has just reached the point in session where both the Senate Finance Committee and the House Appropriations Committee have released their budgets. And, you know, our values as a Commonwealth are reflected in what is in those budgets and, perhaps more telling, what is left out of those budgets. Michael Cassidy is the president and CEO of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis, and he's here to share some details about what is being proposed and specifically the implications for low and moderate income people in Virginia. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you back again. You were here, I guess it was over 2 months ago. It was before the General Assembly got kicked off and kind of talking about what issues were going to be coming up. But now we're in the midst of it.
Yes, we're about at the halfway point of the General Assembly session this week.
Okay. And give us just a quick reminder, your elevator speech. What is it that the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis brings to the discussions that are taking place?
Sure. So we're a nonpartisan, nonprofit policy research group here in Virginia that does a wide array of fiscal and economic policy research and analysis with a focus on how public policies affect low and moderate income Virginians. And so our work is really trying to lift up the concerns of folks who often don't have a voice in our public policy debates, particularly critically important ones like state budget and tax debates and issues around the economy, to make sure that their concerns are also considered by lawmakers as they shape and craft critical public policies here in the Commonwealth.
Well, it sounds like you're helping to lift up those voices that haven't traditionally been heard in the discussion.
Yes, exactly.
Great. Well, can you start by giving us, you mentioned we're at about that halfway point in the General Assembly session. So what's going on right now with the budgets out?
Sure. So we've got a busy week this week down on Capitol Square. Virginia has just a 45-day legislative session this year, and so we are about at the halfway point of that. So today is what's often referred to as crossover day, and that means that bills have to pass the floors of each chamber into which they have been introduced. And if they don't get passed by midnight tonight, then they're dead. And
okay.
Then after today, those bills will cross over to the other chambers. So a bill that passed the House over the last few weeks will make its way over to the Senate and start the process all over again there, getting consideration by the other chamber and vice versa. Tomorrow, the General Assembly has to finish its work on any revenue bills. And then Thursday, the state budgets are on the floor of both the Senate and the House. So it's a very big week, both for all the legislation has to be through the original chambers by today. We're going to have a lot of action around tax policy bills and revenue bills. And then the state budget floor action will be Thursday.
So a good time for people to get out and let their voices be heard about what's important to them.
Absolutely. I mean, this is really a key period where lawmakers are deliberating over critical issues like where are we going to put our resources? What are we going to invest in our community? What are we going to do about our roads and bridges and mass transit in the state in terms of transportation? And so it's a key moment for folks across the community to get plugged in and to voice their own opinions and views on these essential issues.
Well, thanks for being here to shed some light on some of the topics that are in front of us right now. When you were here before, we spent a fair amount of time talking about the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act. And we talked a little bit about how important it was for Virginia to find a way to expand Medicaid. Can you let us know where that stands currently?
Sure. So we've got a big challenge ahead of us with regard to whether Virginia is going to go forward with the expansion of the Medicaid program to have more Virginians covered through the Medicaid program. Because on Sunday, when our state's budget committees released their budgets, they both put a lot of requirements on Virginia to reform and improve the Medicaid program before Virginia could go forward with expanding coverage to more low-income Virginians. But more troubling was that they both the House and the Senate included language that really kicks the can to next year's General Assembly to deal with this issue. And the problem is, of course, that the expansion of coverage under the Affordable Care Act is due to start January 1st, 2014. And so it really
we're in 2013.
Exactly.
So
exactly. It needs to be the work of this General Assembly session to craft what the policy solution is going to be for Virginia. Of course, there's a great deal of incentives for all states, including Virginia, to go forward with the expansion of coverage because, for example, it's fully paid for by the federal government for the first 3 years of the expansion, and then the federal government will pay for no less than 90% of it after that. And that's a good deal for Virginia. I mean, our typical Medicaid program is only 50% paid for by the federal government. So to have 100% paid for is a really good deal for the state. But that money is only available 2014, 2015, 2016. And so for Virginia to delay and to not make the important decisions that it needs to now so that we can be positioned to move forward with the expansion come January is just means that we're going to lose out on billions of dollars of federal money that could be used to help improve the lives of hundreds of thousands of low-income, mostly working Virginians across the state.
So it's not only will folks not have access to health coverage and access to health care, but then you think about the potential expansion in job opportunities that would come with that type of federal funding coming to Virginia, right?
Yes, and multiple analyses have looked at this issue from different approaches, sort of racked and stacked the numbers in different ways, and they've all come to the same conclusion, which is that the expansion of coverage would mean about 30,000 new jobs for Virginia. That's because if Virginia went ahead and expanded coverage and drew down the very generous federal match dollars that are available, about $2 billion a year would be flowing into Virginia that would help support new employment in the healthcare sector. And so at a time when we still are struggling with high rates of joblessness and unemployment in our state, at a time when we've got 1 million uninsured folks, there's a strong case to be made for how the expansion not only will help give folks coverage that they need for health insurance, but also be a good boost for our economy in sparking the creation of 30,000 jobs in a critical sector of our economy, namely the healthcare sector.
Right, because then those jobs will mean more income to spend at the grocery store, spend at the dry cleaners, but really boosting the local economies.
Yeah. Exactly, because when you think about the jobs of, you know, nurses and nurse practitioners, folks working in the front offices of healthcare clinics or offices, and all the support staff of the folks who deliver the linens that get used in our hospitals and clinics, and all the supplies and the equipment and everything, all of those businesses would stand to gain employment because of the significant influx of federal dollars. And so it would be a real lost opportunity for Virginia to delay. I mean, just some basic math, it's going to cost about $5 million a day if we don't go ahead with the expansion in 2014 as scheduled. And so that's a lot of money.
I
mean,
it sure is.
When you think about what the cost of delay really is, it's very significant beyond just the 400,000 folks who would stand to be eligible for coverage. Just in terms of the dollars and cents of it, $5 million a day is a very steep price for Virginia to pay for choosing to delay action on this critical issue.
So help me understand why there is a delay at this time. What is the hesitance? Is it because there is a desire for more reform within Medicaid and how it's carried out or how it's administered in the state? Is that part of it?
I think it's a mix of both political and policy concerns. When you look at some of the issues on policy front that many people have raised, there's some important issues that Virginia can certainly work into how we execute an expansion of coverage. So these are things like, how do we maybe align the health benefits offered under the expansion to be more like a commercial insurance product and less like traditional Medicaid? how do we make sure that there's sufficient incentives for patients to be engaged in their care and do the types of things they ought to do in terms of following through on their commitments and their medical appointments and their wellness programs and stuff like
that. Doctor's orders.
Exactly. There's a tremendous amount of flexibility that's already been offered by the federal government for all states to structure different kinds of arrangements in terms of the cost sharing they ask patients to use, in terms of the incentives they would provide to folks. So a lot of those issues, I think, can be
answered. Those are more policy things then.
Exactly.
But you just hinted at the politics involved when you said this is coming from the federal government.
Exactly. And so what we also are seeing is sort of the last gasps of resistance to the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare. So despite the fact that it was enacted by Congress and survived a Supreme Court challenge and a general election in November where President Obama firmly supported, you know, his signature initiative, there's still ongoing resistance to going forward with the significant expansions and changes of the Affordable Care Act. So there's concern over, for example, federal deficit and debt issues, meaning that the feds won't be true to their word in staying committed to the generous federal match rates. So, for example, a wide array of groups, including my own organization, fully support making the expansion contingent on the ongoing availability of the federal funds as promised in the Affordable Care Act. That's what the promise the federal government has made on this, and it makes all the sense in the world for states to say, okay, we're going to go forward and expand coverage to more folks in our state, but you've got to stay true to your part of the deal. And but I think when you really do the dollars and cents of it, you see not only the $2 billion of federal resources that would be brought in, not only the significant reduction in the number of uninsured in our community, but also some real state budget savings that would occur. That's because there's a wide range of things that Virginia currently pays for through our state budget that would now be paid for through federal funds with people having Medicaid coverage.
What kind of things?
So these are things like we currently pay hospitals throughout the state for uncompensated care that they incur costs when they treat somebody who comes through their doors who's not insured. Mm-hmm. For example, just for the two state teaching hospitals at VCU and UVA, we've spent over $1 billion in the last 10 years of payments to them for uncompensated care treatment, as well as all the hospitals throughout the Commonwealth. About a third of the folks who come to our community-based mental health and substance abuse services, the mm-hmm. CSBs, the community service boards, about a third of them are uninsured. And a good chunk of them have income levels that are below, are within the framework of what would be covered if Virginia went ahead.
So they would be coming, instead of being uninsured, they would come with a payer source that's supported by the federal government.
Exactly.
So right now we are as a state, we're covering this uncompensated care, and that those payments could be taken over by the federal government if we move forward with expansion.
Exactly. Okay. And the thing about it is we're not talking about cutting services to folks here. Mm-hmm. Where folks would still be getting the services that they're getting, you know, mm-hmm. in terms of community-based mental health and substance abuse services. It's just a question of who would be paying for those services. And there's an offer on the table for Virginia where the federal government has said, we'll pay for services for this population if you expand your coverage. And the implications of that offer on the table are that the state would see some really significant savings as well as improvements in community health. And so those kinds of real fiscal implications for the state, as well as the community benefits for having a healthier population and a healthier workforce.
Really, to mention saving lives.
Yes, right? Exactly. And those are the types of things that really should be front and center in this debate. But we've seen some of the politics continue to play out. So Thursday is the day that the budget is going to be debated on the floor of both the House and the Senate. And we've already seen some very significant policy debate on this issue on Sunday when the Senate committee released their budget. All of the Democrats voted against the budget because it had this provision to delay implementation of the Medicaid expansion. And so there'll be an active discussion on the floor of the Senate on Thursday on this issue. And I think we need to stay tuned in terms of how it plays out, because a lot of lawmakers are already hearing from folks from across the state, community groups and individuals, consumers and folks who are uninsured or underinsured, are burning up the phone lines right now, telling their lawmakers that the costs of delay are too high and that Virginia needs to move forward for this.
So what can people do if one of our listeners wants to make some calls or get informed on how they can take action and get involved? What do you recommend?
So there's a lot of options. One great resource is a broad-based statewide coalition called Healthcare for All Virginians, and the Healthcare for All Virginians coalition is made up of over 50 organizations plus individuals who believe that Virginia should have adequate, affordable health care for all and therefore should go forward with the Medicaid expansion. They have a website, havcoalition.org, which provides great up-to-date information on what's going on with this issue and terrific resources for how to get plugged in and how to reach out to your lawmakers and make your voice heard on this critically important healthcare issue.
Great. So that's havcoalition.org. Great. Well, if you're interested, then sounds like a great place to get more information and learn how to stay current and get involved in the issue. Now, if you are just joining us, you're listening to Inspire Indeed on WRIR 97.3 FM. And today we're talking about the implications of the budget that's before the General Assembly currently and the discussions that are going on. Michael Cassidy is president and CEO of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis, which looks at these policies specifically with a lens of how they will impact low-income and moderate-income people in Virginia. Michael, could you share your website to learn more about the Commonwealth Institute?
Sure. Our website is www.thecommonwealthinstitute.org, and
great.
All of our studies and research are available there.
Okay, wonderful. And I'm sure you can find a lot of information about Medicaid expansion on that website as well. So moving on to some other important issues, you mentioned at the top of the show, roads and transportation issues, and that there's been a lot of discussion in the media as well about the different plans that have been put forward. Can you catch us up with where we are in our transportation plan for the Commonwealth?
Sure. So Governor McDonnell released a proposal in the early days of the session that laid out his plan for how to find new funding for transportation. And that proposal has been tweaked a little bit by the House. The bill was patroned there by the Speaker, Speaker Howell, and it's been passed by the House. The version on the Senate side, however, is hitting some more congested traffic, if you will, for legislative deliberation. The patron there was Senator Newman, who submitted the bill that the governor had proposed, and he has brought forward a substitute bill just yesterday that lays out a very different approach for funding transportation going forward.
So this is a big part of this is how we're going to fund our – I think people understand there's a great need for infrastructure related to transportation. A bunch of this discussion is about how we actually will fund it, correct?
Exactly.
So what is the governor's plan say we need to do in order to adequately fund our transportation needs?
So the governor's proposal had a handful of options that would on net raise about $400 million next year in new revenue for transportation.
Okay, in addition to what's already being invested in transportation.
Exactly. And so how he was proposing to do it, however, was through a set of policies, many of which have run up against strong objection in the General Assembly. So, for example, one proposal that he has renewed from prior years was a proposal to divert a growing share of our state sales tax revenue from the general fund, which goes to fund education and healthcare and public safety, over to transportation to say, okay, we're going to take a growing share of our general fund resources and direct them to transportation. That is a large chunk of his proposal. That same idea has failed in the past in the General Assembly, so he's reproposing that. He also has had some new fees that would be put into the mix. So, like a $15 increase in registration fees for cars, $100 alternative fuel vehicle fee that would be put on folks, and they also raised revenues as part of the package. And then he had two other parts that were pretty unique. One was an interesting swap where he wants to eliminate the state gas tax of 17.5 cents on the gallon and replace it with a higher state sales tax. And the other one that was fairly unique was he wants to book new revenue that would come to Virginia from a potential bill that Congress might enact to require online remote retailers to actually collect state sales tax.
Right? Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha. And that's been in discussion for a while.
Exactly.
Amazon's here, so we have to pay tax now.
So. Right. And so this would sort of extend some of the provisions of the deal that the state struck with Amazon last year to all remote sellers, more or less.
Gotcha.
Because Congress has historically banned states from requiring internet sellers to actually collect the state sales tax like a bricks and mortar store does.
Right. So part of his plan is counting on that to come through. So talk a little bit about what this would mean if we were taking money out of the general fund to fund transportation. What does that do for education and healthcare?
So it provides a really serious threat to adequate funding for those key core services that the state has funded. Mostly because Virginia is a growing state with growing needs. We have more and more students to educate in our schools throughout the state. We have an aging population as well, who has particularly growing healthcare needs. And we, have needs in the area of public safety in terms of adequate funding for police and fire protection and all the building blocks of a strong community. The challenge is, though, that if a growing share of resources is diverted over to transportation, that puts front and center the question of, okay, how are we going to adequately fund these other services? One way to look at it that I think puts this all in perspective is, if you think about if this provision had been in place in recent years, Virginia would have had to cut our general fund budget by $1 billion more than we have already.
And we're already facing such major cuts. When you hear about our local school system and the cuts that they're facing.
Yeah, and when you think about the series of cuts that have come down during the recession, for example, in education, where the state has reduced funding, where you've got reductions in funding for things like healthcare, where, the payments made to doctors and hospitals who treat folks on Medicaid, for example, have been cut. And the whole host of cuts. Just think about all those and then add another $1 billion of cuts to them. And that's the actual impact of what we're talking about here in terms of how much harder it would be to meet the needs of a growing state with growing needs if we have less resources available on the general fund side. That would be the implications of this proposal.
So there's there's a serious threat to the funds for essential services that we all count on. So what's the chance of sort of the next steps of this process? What's going to happen next?
So the Senator Newman's substitute bill has a different way of tackling the gas tax problem and strikes the new fees. And so all you're left with pretty much is the diversion of money over to the transportation fund and this online seller's gimmick. So the diversion of funds is something that Senate Democrats, for example, have voted down in the past and have been rallying in recent days against that idea. So it faces some pretty steep odds on the floor since it's a tax bill, and so the lieutenant governor can't break a tie on tax bills. And so the 2020 split in the Virginia Senate is really at play here in terms of if all of the Democrats oppose this bill, regardless of the other provisions, because it has this diversion in it, the bill could go down to defeat on the Senate floor.
Interesting. Interesting. So if people want some more information on the transportation issues, where would they go to learn?
So our website has a series of analyses and briefs, short issue briefs, delving into different parts. That's on our website at www.thecommonwealthinstitute.org.
Okay, great. Now, Michael, we've talked about some issues that maybe seem like aren't so positive for low and moderate income individuals. So is there any good news coming out of the General Assembly right now?
There is actually some good news. One thing in particular, especially that came out of Sunday's releases of the budget, was the state's decision to restore funding for the Wage Enforcement Division of our state's Department of Labor.
And what do they do?
So what they do is make sure that employers pay the wages that they're supposed to their workers. And unfortunately, the division was defunded in last year's budget. So this makes a real problem for folks out there working hard who have some unscrupulous employer who doesn't pay them their due wages. And when they defunded the unit, there was nowhere for workers to turn to actually seek redress and get some help. Now that the funding is proposed to be restored, there's a some glimmer of hope where we could get the funding restored, get this unit back up and running so that there's an actual enforcement arm in our state's Department of Labor for making sure that unscrupulous employers don't really harm the workers in the way that they've been allowed to without a unit in place over this past year.
Well, what does that really mean for workers then?
So it's really helpful when you think about, you know, if you've done a hard week's work and your employer refuses to pay you, that can bring real economic hardship to you and your family. When you're working paycheck to paycheck, when every bit helps. And if you have nowhere to turn, your options are very, very limited. And now they have a place to actually file a claim and say, hey, wait a second, this guy that I was working for, he has not paid me and I am owed these wages. And they can seek redress and get those wages recovered. And so it can mean really important stuff for family economic security and for overall worker rights in our economy to make sure that there's a real level playing field in the economy here in Virginia.
Well, at least there's one positive thing coming forward in both the budgets currently. Well, thank you, Michael, for joining me today. And what's your website again where people can learn about the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis?
Our website is www.thecommonwealthinstitute.org.
Thanks. Again, I really appreciate you being here to shed light at what's at stake in the debates currently taking place at the General Assembly. That was Michael Cassidy, President and CEO of the Commonwealth Institute for Fiscal Analysis. Before signing off, I just want to remind folks you can visit WRIR.org to see how you can keep this local voice on the air. My name is Elaine Summerfield, and you've been listening to Inspire Indeed. I hope you learned something new on the show today and are ready to go out and make a difference with your deeds.